On this Lord's Day evening, it is good to see everyone who is out. Hope that everyone had a good Lord's Day afternoon, maybe got in a good nap and feeling well rested. And I appreciate all your kind remarks and your hospitality. I want to express my thanks particularly to Brother and Sister Mays for putting me up at their house. They have treated me like a king, and I appreciate that so much. In fact, I want to invite everyone to come spend a night at their house because it's been so nice there. And I didn't ask their permission, so you better check with them about that. But certainly have enjoyed getting to know them. Appreciate the church here. You know, I was asked to speak today on the topic of moral issues. And so in a sense, it feels like we are picking on people all day long. And that is certainly not what we're trying to do. But we're trying to look at some issues that are very prominent in the world around us. And as Christians, to make sure that we are living as we ought to be, and also to help ourselves to more effectively teach the people in the world around us. My wife and I, on the 25th of May this year, had our 20th wedding anniversary. And so I wanted to do something special. So I decided that I was going to take her on a cruise. We live in Charleston, South Carolina, and we have cruise ships that come right into the Charleston Harbor. And so we got a cruise, and we left out of Charleston on a Carnival ship, and we went down to the Bahamas for a few days, and it was very enjoyable. We had a good time, but I have got to tell you, on that cruise ship, if any of you have ever taken a cruise before, I don't guess I have ever seen so much gambling in my entire life. Right in the middle of the ship, there is a big casino, and you don't have to walk through it, but you do have to walk by it. And you can see the people in there, and they're playing the slot machines and the roulette wheel and the poker and all of the various games. And the amount of money that is being spent in there, I can't even imagine. A few weeks after we got back from the cruise, I went to Houston, Texas to do a gospel meeting. And I was talking to a lady in the congregation there, and she said to me, she said, "Brother Blackwell, I saw the video that you did on gambling." And she said, "It's helped me a lot." She said, "You know, I used to have a serious problem with gambling." She said, "The area in which I live, it is illegal to gamble." She said, "But there are establishments where people go." And she said, "The police know about them. They just kind of turn a blind eye to them." And she said, "I would go there all the time." She said, "I'd go on my lunch hour." And I said, "Just out of curiosity, how much money have you spent over the years gambling? How much money have you lost gambling?" And she said, "Oh, hundreds of thousands." Not hundreds, not thousands, but hundreds of thousands. The question we want to talk about this hour is it wrong for a Christian to gamble? Is it wrong for anyone to gamble? Now, sometimes people will say, "There's no verse in the Bible that says gambling is wrong." Now, have you noticed a pattern as we've gone through some of these moral issues? That over and over again, when you look at moral issues, one of the first things that people will say is, "There's no verse that says not to get a tattoo. There's no verse that says not to gamble. There's no verse that says thou shalt not dance." That is one of the first things that usually comes out of people's mouths. And what we have to do is look at principles. Because again, there is no verse in the Bible that says thou shalt not play blackjack for money. But that doesn't mean that the Bible doesn't address gambling. And there are a number of biblical principles that do come into play to answer this question, and that do teach that gambling is absolutely wrong. Now, I have tried to pick out some of these principles that I think deal very clearly with this subject. And the reason I say that is I have at times heard Christians make arguments that I thought were very weak. And when we make weak arguments, we actually hurt ourselves. I have sometimes heard people argue this. They'll say, "Well, the reason gambling is wrong is because the Bible teaches that we're to work for our money." Well, that's true. We are to work for our money. Christians are to work to make a living. But you know, that's a weak argument. Because if you take it at face value, that would condemn giving somebody a gift. If you gave someone a gift, they haven't worked for it, and this argument would condemn them. But that's not right. You know, if we help someone who is in poor, or someone who is poor, or someone who is in need, certainly that's not wrong to do. It's something that we ought to do and to help people. It's a Christian principle, but they haven't worked for it. They didn't earn it. And so if this is an argument that's right and you take it on face value, then it would condemn that. And so it's not a good argument. And sometimes people will say this. They'll say, well, the reason that gambling is wrong is because of the risk factor. Brethren, gambling is not wrong because of the risk factor. Risk in and of itself is not wrong. You know, life in and of itself is a risk. When you got in the car to come to services this evening, you were taking a risk. Being a Christian is a risk, especially in the first century. It was risky to be a Christian. When you read about the one talent man in Matthew chapter 25, you remember he was condemned because he didn't want to take a risk. You know, when a farmer plants a crop, he has taken a risk, but that doesn't mean he sinned. When a man buys money or when a man buys stock in the stock market, he's taken a risk, but that doesn't mean he sinned. Risk in and of itself is not something that is sinful. And so we need to be very careful about the arguments that we make. And oftentimes in Christianity, I think the truth suffers because we make weak arguments. All right, let's give a definition of gambling, and then we're going to talk about it. What is gambling? There are three basic elements involved in gambling. It's important that you get this because sometimes questions come up. Is this gambling? Is that gambling? You need to know the definition. Three things involved in gambling. Number one, an uncertain, arbitrary event. Number two, a wager, something of value, like money, that is deliberately chanced on a particular outcome. Number three, a winner and a loser. And the winner wins at the direct loss of the loser. When you've got those three things, an arbitrary event, a wager, a winner and a loser, then you have gambling. Now, let's discuss some real biblical reasons that gambling is wrong. Here's number one, the word covetousness. Covetousness. I want to ask the question first, and I want you to think about it. What is it that motivates men to gamble? Now just think about that for a minute. What motivates men to gamble? Two of the first things that come to my mind are greed and covetousness. You know, under the law of Moses, one of the Ten Commandments was, thou shalt not covet. Now what that means is, don't lust for, don't long for, don't desire something that belongs to someone else. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 17 says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Well, what about his money that's on the table? Can you covet that? You know, how are you going to sit around the table and gamble over a poker game and not violate this principle? You know, in Luke chapter 12 and verse 15, Jesus said, take heed and beware of covetousness. And so covetousness is a problem. Why is gambling wrong? This would be one reason, because of what it motivates men to do. Here's number two. Gambling is wrong because it preys on the weaknesses of others. Now, brethren, Christian principles are just the opposite of this. Christian principles teach, as you therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, Galatians 6:10. Now, that would involve helping people who are in need, not taking their money. Christian principles teach us to help the poor and to feed the hungry. But gambling steals from the poor and it robs the hungry. I have heard it said that the busiest day in Atlantic City casinos, you want to take a guess what it is? The busiest day in Atlantic City casinos is the day after welfare checks are sent out. People who can least afford it are going to the casinos hoping to strike it big. And a gambler may win big at the loss of those who can least afford it. It preys on the weaknesses of others. And statistics say that a disproportionate number of people who play the lottery are very poor. And so what they do is they take money, they take food out of their children's mouths, and they take that money and they go and play the lottery. And they go and gamble. And their families suffer for it. In fact, one study found that the poor bet approximately 3 times the amount wagered by people in the middle and upper classes. Another study concluded that the lotteries in Connecticut and Massachusetts were equivalent to a state tax of over 60% on lower income groups. Gambling preys on the weaknesses of others. It profits on the pain of others. It is exactly the opposite of what Christian principles teach. Number three, gambling is wrong because of the fruit test. Now, what do I mean by that? In Matthew chapter 7, verses 15 through 20, Christ laid down a test by which every activity and every philosophy could be measured. This is what he said. He said, every good tree bears good fruit. A bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bring forth good fruit. Now somebody said, Brother Blackwell, that's talking about false teachers. Don't you know that? That means that he's talking about a test to see whether a person is teaching the truth or error. And that's true. That's the context. But this is a principle that would apply to all activities in life. Now, let's ask the question, what kind of fruit does gambling produce? When legalized gambling arrives in a new community, does it raise the moral standards of that community? Does it help to lessen the hardships of families in that community? Or does it do just the opposite? Friends, it's just the opposite. I know that many times when you drive down the interstate and you go into a new state and maybe they have the lottery or legalized gambling or casinos, they'll have a big billboard when you come into the state and it's got somebody grinning from ear to ear and it says $10 million winner. And you might be tempted to think, well, that's a good thing. That's not a good thing. Gambling does not pass the fruit test. 8 months after casinos opened in Gulfport, Mississippi, the Gulfport Police Department noted the following. See how it does on the fruit test. 8 months after casinos opened, murder increased by 75%. You think that's a coincidence? Rape increased by 200%. Robbery increased by 311%. Assault increased by 64%. Burglary increased 100%. Vehicle theft 160%. You think that's all just coincidence? 3 years after casinos arrived, Atlantic City went from 50th to number one in per capita crime. Well, how about the great state of Nevada, the home of Las Vegas, Nevada? I read that the state of Nevada ranks number one in suicide, number one in divorce, number one in high school dropouts, number one in homicide against women, near the top in gambling addictions, third in bankruptcies, third in abortion, fourth in rape, fourth in out-of-wedlock births, fourth in alcohol-related deaths, fifth in crime, and sixth in the number of prisoners locked up, and last in voter participation. Now, somebody might say, well, that's not all due to gambling. Don't you know they have prostitution there and they have drinking and there are other factors that contributed to this? And I don't doubt that for a second. I know these other sins contributed to it. But don't you think it's interesting how these things go together? Isn't it interesting how gambling and prostitution and drinking all go together? Friends, gambling miserably fails the fruit test. Here's number four. A fourth principle is from Proverbs chapter 13. And verse 11. Now, one thing people oftentimes will say is, they'll say, there aren't any verses in the Bible dealing with gambling. When I was preparing this lesson, I ran across a verse that I thought was very interesting. Proverbs 13 and verse 11. The King James reads this way. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he who gathers by labor shall increase. Now, the word vanity caught my attention because the word vanity means emptiness. It means nothingness. And I thought, wealth gotten by emptiness. I thought that sounds kind of like gambling. And so I stopped and I looked it up in some other translations. The English Standard Version says, wealth gotten hastily will diminish. And it has a footnote that says, wealth gained by fraud. And I thought, that sounds like gambling. And so I looked it up in another translation. It said, wealth gotten from get-rich-quick schemes quickly disappears. Wealth from hard work grows. I checked another translation. It says, wealth from gambling quickly disappears. Wealth from hard work grows. Brethren, there is a principle in Proverbs 13 and verse 11 that directly reflects on gambling in a negative way. Here's number five. Gambling is wrong because it is addictive. Do you know what happens to people when they win at gambling? Not talking about losing, but they win at gambling. You know what happens? They want to win again, and they want more. And the greed and covetousness takes control of them and sometimes takes control of their lives. Now you might say, well, Don, that'd just be some people. You know, maybe some people it does, maybe some people it doesn't. It has happened to so many people that we have organizations in this country like Gamblers Anonymous. One preacher said that in the state of Texas, on the back of their lottery tickets, there is the phone number for the gambler's hotline. Now, that's interesting to me. He said he called the number, and he asked them to send him some material. I don't know why the preacher had a lottery ticket, but anyway, he called the number and asked them to send him some information. Interestingly, when he got it, according to this information, you know what the number one gambling problem was in the state of Texas? He said it was the lottery, 73%. According to a popular columnist, one study they did revealed that 43% of people who gamble have a compulsion toward it that results in them spending more money than they can afford to spend. An article written referenced the Dallas Times Herald from a number of years ago, and a pawn shop owner was talking about the fact that he had people come in his pawn shop and pawn artificial limbs. He said in one case, a glass eye. In another case, they pulled out a gold tooth with pliers so that they could get money to feed their gambling addiction. Now, brethren, that is an addiction. This is what the Bible says. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 12. This is the New King James. The Apostle Paul says, I will not be brought under the power of any. Well, Paul, what do you mean by that? Listen to another version. Paul says, I will not engage in anything, listen to this, which might get such a grip on me that I cannot easily stop when I want to. Brethren, that's the nature of gambling. It is addictive in nature. Here's number six. Gambling is poor stewardship. In Matthew chapter 25, we have the parable of the talents. And oftentimes we read the parable of the talents and we say, well, what this parable means is we need to use our talents in the service of God. And I certainly don't think that's a misuse of this parable. But you know, a talent in this parable is a unit of money. Just like they had a talent, we have a dollar. And so you might say a certain man was given $1 and a man was given $2 and another man was given $5. Now, whether it's specifically a parable about money or whether it's about our talents in general, I don't think really makes any difference. The point is it has application to everything we have. All of my talents need to be used in the service of God. All of my money needs to be used in the service of God. And I need to be a good steward of the things that God has given me. And two of these men in the parable of the talents were condemned because they were not good stewards. Now you say, what does that have to do with gambling? I want you to listen to some statistics with me for just a minute. The odds of winning the lottery. Now, of course, it depends on who you play or where you play and a number of factors. But at the time that I prepared this, the odds of winning the lottery varied from 18 million to 1 all the way up to 120 million to 1. That's not good either way. But I want to consider the bigger number here. 120 million to 1. The odds of being struck by lightning are 2,650,000 to 1. That means that you are 45 times more likely to be struck by lightning than you are to win the lottery. You are 120 times more likely to die from a flesh-eating bacteria than you are to win the lottery. The chance of playing golf with three of your friends and two of you hitting a hole-in-one in the same hole are greater than winning the lottery. You are 1,200 times more likely to die from a snake bite or a bee sting than you are to win the lottery. And here, this one's my favorite. If you have to drive 10 miles to the store to purchase a lottery ticket, it is 20 times more likely that you will be killed in a car wreck on the way to the store than you will win the jackpot. Now, two of the biggest lottery programs, Powerball and Mega Million, Listen to this. For Powerball, the odds of winning the jackpot on any given ticket are 1 to 146,107,962. For Mega Millions, it's 1 to 175,711,536. These are higher odds than we were just talking about. The odds of winning these, statistically speaking, are essentially zero. Now, let's make our application here. What if you go to your financial manager, your guy at Charles Schwab or Edward Jones Investments, you know, whoever your broker is, and you find out that your broker is sinking a certain portion of your retirement money into a mutual fund that has in essence, a 0% chance of making any money? Or he said to you, I've got to tell you, you've got 175 million to one chance of this making some money for you. Would you think that this man is a good steward of your money? How long would it take you to fire this man and find a new broker? Brethren, the lottery is sinful because the Lord holds us accountable for our stewardship, for the money, for the resources that we have. I heard one man describe the lottery, and I like this. He described it as a tax on people who can't do math. What did he mean by that? He meant people who can understand math and who understand odds don't play the lottery. Here's number 7. The lottery, the gambling. Gambling is wrong because of the influence principle. Ladies and gentlemen, gambling is something that even the world views as a vice. It's an adult activity. Now, I live in the state of South Carolina. In the state of South Carolina, the law says you have to be 18 years old to purchase a lottery ticket. Why? Because they say it's an adult activity. And you've seen the commercials that says, what goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas. And what do they show on the commercial? Now, they usually show someone gambling and someone drinking alcohol and engaging in other activities. And there's a reason that they call Las Vegas Sin City, and gambling is a big part of that. And a Christian who then plays the lottery or who engages in gambling is doing something that hurts his influence very seriously. You know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul said this, if eating meat causes my brother to stumble, that is meat offered to idols, if eating meat causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 12. Paul was so concerned about his influence, he said, I will never do it again. Even something lawful, even something that's permitted, I will not do it again if it causes a problem. How much more so should I look at something that might hurt my influence and say, I'm never going to do that? You know, James 1:27 says, pure and undefiled religion involves keeping yourself unspotted from the world. There is an old proverb that says this, in a bet there is a fool and there is a thief. And I would mention that neither one of those does a whole lot of good for my reputation. I don't want to be the fool or the thief. All right, here's major point number 2. I want to talk about some objections that are made in defense of gambling. Anytime you talk about gambling, there are going to be some people who want to argue about it, who are going to say, you're wrong about this. There are some things you haven't considered. Number 1, sometimes people will say, there's not a verse in the Bible that says not to. Now, we've already talked about this. There's not a verse in the Bible that says, thou shalt not play blackjack. But there are lots of verses that contain principles that condemn this. And Proverbs 13:11, as I mentioned a minute ago, I believe does relate to this. Number 2, people will say, well, Don, all of life is a risk. You're saying gambling is wrong. Don't you know all of life is a risk? Gambling is not wrong because of the risk. Number 3, sometimes people will say, well, gambling is really no different than playing the stock market. That is not a true statement. When somebody says that, don't let them get away with that. You know, in the stock market, you profit or lose based on the economic performance of a company. In the stock market, you don't seek to gain at the direct loss of others. That's why you've got to understand the definition of gambling. You see, in the stock market, in economic gain, everybody profits. You sell a company produces a product, they sell it, the company profits because the product sold, the consumer gets the product, they're happy, everyone comes out on top. That is not the definition of gambling. And profiting from letting someone else use your money is not sinful. It's an honest economic principle, and you can see that in the Bible in Matthew 25, 14 through 20. Well, somebody says, well, Don, don't you know that a lot of good comes from gambling? You know, this is a lie that many states have been fed. Many politicians have said to their constituents when they're trying to legalize gambling. You know the old argument, well, it's for education. You know, it's good for the economy. I would point out that this is a favorite argument of the devil. The devil likes to promote sin on the basis that good will come out of it. You know, abortion. Well, there's stem cell research. That saves lives. We should have abortion. Alcohol. Well, there are health benefits. It's good for your heart. You ought to drink alcohol. Gambling. It's good for the economy. It produces benefits for education. It's a lie of the devil. Don't believe this. And you might say, well, you know, still, even from a biblical standpoint, it might be wrong, but from a financial standpoint, it would be a good thing. Even from a financial standpoint, it's not a good thing. Michael Fitzgerald, who was a columnist for the Stockton, California Record, he deals with this, quote, economic argument for gambling. Specifically, he's talking about casinos. He says, not so. And he cites a 1994 study out of the University of Illinois that indicated this. The social problems that come from gambling, such as gambling addiction, domestic abuse, suicide, crime, indebtedness, etc., he said the social problems created far outweigh any benefits to the community. In fact, he said the gambling enterprise cost taxpayers $3 for every $1 of state revenue that is collected. Now, what's his point? You're not making money. The state might say, hey, you're bringing in a dollar here and there. It's costing you $3 to clean up the mess it makes. Additionally, a Creighton University study found that counties with casinos found that very soon they had double the bankruptcy rates as counties without casinos. Don't buy this benefit argument. That's the point we're making. And besides that, you know, the Bible teaches that it is never right to do wrong. And when a Christian starts thinking, well, I'll do wrong so that good may come from it, we get in big trouble. We can't reason like that. That's not how Christians operate. We don't do wrong that good may come. Now, somebody says, well, Brother Blackwell, I only spend a dollar a week. It's just $1. You know, I buy one lottery ticket a week, and I'm not wasting that much money. It's just a cheap way to have some fun, and it just gives me something to hope for. Folks, if you want something to hope for, lay up treasures in heaven, Matthew 6 and verse 20. And regardless of what you might say, you're still wasting money. You know, a dollar a week, that's $52 a year. You send $52 a year to a missionary in Africa, and that could make a lot of difference. And certainly, you're still hurting your influence. It's going to be hard for you to stand in line at the gas station and to buy a lottery ticket and turn around and talk to the person behind you about the gospel. Your influence is going to be demolished. And you know, think about this. This argument that says, it's just a little bit. I only do a little bit. What if we applied that to other areas? What if I said, I only look at a little bit of pornography? You know, I only spend a dollar a week on Playboy magazine. Or I only use the Lord's name in vain a little bit. I only use four-letter words in connection with the name of God just once a day. Or just once a week. What if I said I only cheat on my taxes just a little bit. I only cheat on my wife just a little bit. You see, we don't believe that. We know better than that. A little bit of sin is still sin. All right, let's change gears a little bit. I want to answer some questions about this. Somebody says, and these are questions that have been turned into me on this subject over the years. One of the questions is this. Is it gambling if you accept money from a sweepstakes, such as Publishers Clearing House, or if you play the McDonald's Monopoly game, is that gambling? I think if you go back and you look at the definition of gambling, these things don't meet the definition. Why? It hasn't cost you anything. You haven't put any money toward it. And so if a person plays the publisher's clearinghouse, they don't put any money forward, or they play the Monopoly game at McDonald's and they get their cup and they peel the sticker off and put it on, it's not gambling. It doesn't meet the definition. There's no money put forth to qualify. And so when you look at the three things that define it, it doesn't meet the definition. Number two, a child actually turned this in to me after I preached on gambling. He said, can you gamble if you give the money back at the end of the game? And I thought that's a pretty good question coming from a child. You know, I envision a family and maybe they're sitting around playing cards and maybe they're using the money as a way to keep score or to determine who wins. And at the end, they give the money back. The question is that wrong? You know, I guess if you give the money back, it doesn't really meet the definition of gambling, because gambling is taking that which belongs to another through a wager. I'd be careful with that, though, because I wouldn't want my kids to be thinking about we're playing poker and there's money here, and I'd also be concerned what someone else might think if they walked in and saw that. But technically, I guess it's not gambling. Here's a third one. I'll make this the last question. The question says, if you found a lottery ticket and it turned out to be the winning ticket, would it be wrong to keep the money? Wouldn't that be nice? The question is, would it be wrong to keep the money if you found a ticket? Well, I guess that it wouldn't actually be gambling for you, because you haven't put anything forward, you haven't risked anything. But I would say this, with reference to your influence, I still think it would be a bad thing to do. You would be putting yourself and your influence at risk. And it's something that you would be putting yourself into the circle of partaking of another man's sin. You know, I'd ask this question. What if a casino decided they want to make a large donation to the church? Would it be okay for us to take that? I don't think we ought to take that. You know, there would be some serious baggage associated with that. And I think the same thing would be true here. If you won $50,000 and everyone in the community knows you're a Christian and you won that money and you took that money, it's not going to be good for your name. And for one, a lot of people aren't going to believe you found it. You're going to say, well, I found that ticket. They're going to say, yeah, right. You were playing the lottery. I think a good question to ask would be this. Would you risk selling your good name for $50,000? And if you can answer that question, I think you've answered this one. You know, we have been talking about moral lessons all day, and someone in the world might be tempted to say, you know, you Christians just don't know how to have any fun. You condemn everything. You say that we shouldn't do anything. It sounds like a miserable life. But you know, God has given us these things, I think, largely as protection to ourselves. And if we follow these principles, we have the best life that a person can have on this earth. But you know, we are looking for something even beyond this earth. Even if there weren't a heaven above, the Christian life is the best life and the happiest life to live. But I'm looking for something that is beyond this world. It's beyond a happy life here and now. I'm looking for a home eternally in heaven. And the only way to do that is through obedience to the gospel, living faithfully, and keeping myself unspotted from this world. The Bible teaches to be a child of God, the first thing that a person needs to do is obey the gospel. The way you do that is by hearing it, believing it, repenting of your sins, confessing your faith in Christ, and being baptized in water for the remission of sins. Maybe tonight you say, I want to know more about that. We would be glad to sit down and study with you. Maybe you're here and you say, I am ready. I know what to do. I've known for a while. Tonight, I want to do it. I want to make that confession. I want to be baptized. We'd be delighted to help you. Maybe you're here as a member of the Lord's church and you've sinned publicly. You've brought reproach upon your own name and the name of Christ. And maybe you need to come forward tonight and confess publicly your sin. And we would be honored to go.